It must be said, this has been an exciting facet of the last few years, isn't it? Where you suddenly start thinking, God, this could be the last one of these I ever have to buy.
Mm.
I mean, it's in its own way, it's alarming, but in another way, I suppose it's quite liberating. So yeah, I'm still coming to terms with that.
Hello and welcome to the AV Forums Hi-Fi podcast for the 1st of July 2024. And joining me on this edition is AV Forums Hi-Fi editor, Ed Selly. Good afternoon, Ed.
Hello, sir. This is very intimate, isn't it?
It's just the two of us building castles in the sky. What are we talking about today? We are talking about high-quality, high-end hi-fi. Is it actually worth the investment? What is it that you're paying for these days? What is it that you're looking for when it comes to hi-fi kit? Are you the type of person who wants the sound quality but couldn't care less what the product looks like? Or are you somebody who, if you're spending all that coin, you want something that looks like you spent a lot of coin? We're going to talk about that today because we're taking you down the journey of buying a hi-fi, investing in hi-fi. So is it actually worth investing in the equipment and higher-end equipment because you're going to own it longer or so on? We're going to get into all of that very quickly and very soon. But first of all, we just need to introduce who we are. Well, we're AV Forums. We've been around since 2000. Editorial has been around since 2003. And I've been the editor for 20-odd years. And my name's Phil Hinton. Normally, you'll find me on the TV reviews. I do review audio equipment, the occasional bit of hi-fi. And I'm certified by ISF, THX, and PVA. And also on the podcast is the hi-fi editor, Ed Selly. Ed, just tell us all about you.
Yes, as the title suggests, I look after the two-channel audio side for AV Forums, which I've done now for over 10 years. Every once in a great while, I still look at an AV product, but we now have a team of dedicated, enthusiastic and talented AV reviewers who have their own podcast and talk about these things. So for the most part, I concentrate on two-channel, which has become a more significant part of what AV Forums does at about the same rate that it's become a more significant part of what the industry does. So I've been doing that for a while now, and I've been a member of AV Forums for over 20 years, which is alarming in itself. But yes, that's what I do and how I do it.
Yeah. So the purpose of the podcast is that you can dip into any of these podcasts. It's not date or time specific. We're going to take you through each of the subjects every month and hopefully impart some of our knowledge that we've built up over the years. And of course, you can ask us questions as well. So if you've got any questions, we'll answer them in the next possible podcast. And we do have your questions from the last one, or the last two actual podcasts. They will be coming at the end of the show, so stay tuned for that. And also the competitions will be coming up in a little while as well, so stay tuned for those. But we want to get into the subject straight away. And of course, we've been taking you through the journey of buying hi-fi, investing into a hi-fi system. Hi-fi's changed, Ed. Quite significantly, a lot of things changed since COVID and lockdown and all the rest of it. I think everybody's perception of things and so on kind of changed with that. So there is that. There's obviously the cost of living crisis. We've seen economies fall a bit in some parts of the world. Mm. There's lots of strain on people's finances these days and so on. So again, that kind of impacts on what we're going to talk about today. But the main subject is, and it's quite an interesting one, which you raised just before we came on, we were having a bit of a discussion about it in some detail. So let's get to the crux of it. Why is high-quality hi-fi equipment worth the investment, or is it?
Yeah. The reason I've flagged this up is we've had a couple of... It's a theme that crops up in a number of products that are looked at on the site, where someone will make the fairly valid point that the actual nuts and bolts of what a product does is could be achieved for less money. And they will either cite an object that does something similar for less money, or they will point out that it's got this functionality and this functionality costs X and the product in question in the review costs Y. Now, leaving aside margins, stuff being imported versus stuff being built here, all sorts of other random complexities, at the core of this is something which you've just touched on, Phil, that hi-fi in particular and AV is following. So I do think this has relevance to AV as well, if you're gamely listening along and waiting for an AV podcast. What we are dealing with on AV Forums is by and large increasingly a luxury good. It is not something that you would define as core necessity. Even when you look at televisions, Phil, you have made it clear we look at a small percentage of interesting affordable televisions. But with the meat and two veg of what we cover are the more premium products with premium features, and as well as performance in terms of absolute screen performance, they've got all sorts of other bells and whistles on as well. They are, bluntly speaking, a more considered luxury good than some of the two-channel audio stuff that I look at, but they are still a luxury good. Now, this path of transition from piece of, you know, fundamental hardware which has a box to prevent you from electrocuting yourself and no other sort of artistry beyond that, to something which is rather more, you know, ornate, is it's a journey. It's happening in irregular steps, but I would say, and you point out, I think COVID is a point, a line in the sand, but it would be wrong to pretend it wasn't happening before, where this path towards luxury good has accelerated. I'm doing this podcast because this is another one where I genuinely want feedback. I genuinely want people's responses to this, because I don't think there's one single right answer. I'm also, as I was saying to Phil before we went live, I firmly believe I'm an outlier on this. I'm going to explain my relationship with luxury goods in a minute. So I'm hoping that Phil's going to interject a moment of normality during this conversation. And I also just want to see where we sit as a group of people, as to what we feel is, you know, an acceptable amount to pay for finish and build. And I was going to use the word superfluous features, but I don't think that's necessarily the right word. Features that don't necessarily correspond to the absolute performance of the product when you hook it up to a measurement device, but its performance in terms of how you live with it on a day-to-day basis. Because I think we're all different, but I do think that somewhere within this is a consensus, and that consensus will, of course, shape the way that we review product and the products that we look at going forwards. So that's why I'm doing it. Before we go any further, I wanted to give an example of another industry where they're completely relaxed about this, and they're relaxed about this on an absurd level. Now, I'm going to hold things up to the camera. So if you are watching this on the video, you can see this. If not, I'm going to try and provide running commentary. In front of me are two watches. I'm ironically then wearing another watch, which is another story. But nevertheless, I have two watches with me. The first is my mighty Casio F91. What a beast. This is a posh one. It's got a metal strap. But it nevertheless, it cost me £30 from Amazon. I wear it to gigs and things like that, where if I lost it, it wouldn't be the end of the world. It tells the time. It's digital, so it tells the time very well. It's got a little light on it to show me the time when it's dark. It's got a stopwatch and an alarm, and it tells me the date. And as I say, it was roughly £32. Next to it is a watch that I wear to weddings and funerals, and when I need to be smart and stuff like that. This it does tell the time, and it's got hours, minutes, and seconds. And you have to wind it up every 40 hours or so, otherwise it stops working. And I make no bones about this, it is far less accurate at telling the time than the Casio is. Now, despite all of those things, it's 100 times the price, thereabouts. So in watch terms, a group of people are completely happy with this, in part because vast swathes of sensible people now just wear Apple Watches, Fitbits, Garmins, etc., so on and so forth. So the actual number of people wearing watches is smaller, like the hi-fi industry. But no one sort of plows onto watch forums and goes, yeah, but you could do this with a Casio F91. There is an industry at peace with the absurdity of high-end luxury goods. So my question to people listening to this, people pass it on, so on and so forth, that's an extreme example. I do not believe there's any absolute parallels to quite how absurd that imbalance is in two-channel audio. But we do have imbalances. You can buy integrated amplifiers with notionally very similar features, and the price spread between them is, you know, it's going to be 15, 20 times, if not necessarily 100 times. And most of that difference comes down to how it's made, how they work, and the standard to which they're built. So where do we step off on this, and where is the sweet spot?
I think a lot of people are going to be driven by their own finances, Ed, at the end of the day. That's always going to be the driver in terms of what people are actually going to spend money on and what they see value in. And I think that is very personal. I think that's very subjective. I also think you also have a few issues, and I'll come back to your watch scenario there. The Casio is a mass-produced product. It's made on a production line, it's mass-produced. The other watch, I would imagine, is a little bit less in terms of scale of production. So the actual production cycle, the parts and so on are going to be that little bit more expensive.
Oh, Casio makes more in
But
a day than these people make in a year. Yeah. So.
but does that mean that those parts are any better? Because you just alluded to it's no more accurate than the
Nope.
Casio. So I guess what you're saying is when we then look at the hi-fi world, some of these brands will be mass produced. So if they are slightly larger, like your Yamahas and so on, where they have a higher scale, they can buy in raw material cheaper, they can produce a lot of things at less cost than somebody who works out of their shed and who builds bespoke turntables or bespoke speakers or the like. So I think we have to take all of that into account when it comes to how much things will cost, because it will vary in terms of, just in terms of mass production. We were speaking to Marek last month on the TV podcast about 98 and 115-inch TVs. And how does that make any financial sense to the company? Well, it makes sense to them because they have one big piece of glass that they can cut a number of different ways, and that offsets the cost of cutting that big bit of glass in two to make 215-inch TVs or 230-inch TVs. But again, if you come back to the hi-fi side of things, you're going to have to look at what is the product, why does it cost what it costs, and then I guess it's down to the end user, and this is just my opinion, whether they can justify that cost. It's like I would love a Ferrari F8 Tributo. I'd love one of those. A Ford Mondeo would get me backwards and forwards and A to B in exactly the same manner as that. It probably wouldn't have the same top speed, but you're never going to drive the Ferrari at top speed. So again, it comes down to your use case, what you think is value for money. And the important thing here, and this is the bit that I don't think we can put any kind of real figure on, is or any kind of value on, is the subjectivity of that end user, that person who's going to drop that coinage. What does it mean to them? Is it a status symbol? Is it something that says, look at me, I can afford these nice things? Or is it more of a case of, like you suggested, and where you come from, where you see value in investing in something that has cost a bit of money to produce, has taken someone a little bit longer rather than standing on a production line and putting a little bit more care and attention into the product? And does that then have more value and add more value for you as an end user?
I think there's an element, and we're skirting around it. There's an element of how do these things make you feel? Now, your car is an interesting one for this. You've touched on the Ferrari and the Mondeo thing. On a more basic level, if we were talking about out and out performance, I know very roughly, we don't need to say it on the podcast, I know very roughly what you paid for your Mustang. And I don't think you would dispute that if it was a case of out and out speed, for the same sum of money, you could have got something that goes faster.
Oh yeah,
And
absolutely.
so, I mean,
Goes
either in a straight
faster,
line or point to point, whatever.
handles better build quality, screwed together better. Yeah, absolutely.
But in terms of how it makes you feel when you interact with it, it's not the same thing
Yeah,
at all.
and it's good that you brought this up, because I think this is an important point as well. Because that car makes me feel part of a community. So I take that car to car shows. We have monthly meetings. We run a group dedicated to owners of that particular model. So it becomes more than just a car. It becomes more than just an object, because you then build relationships and friendships and stuff around that. And it's the same for hi-fi, and it's the same for AV. We're part of AV forums. It's a massive community of like-minded people. But even within that community, and it's interesting that you pick that car type, because we had our first Mach-E turn up at one of these meets last month. So for those who are not aware, the Mach-E is the electric version of the Mustang. It's an SUV. It looks nothing like a traditional Mustang or what a
No.
Mustang should look like. It doesn't have the V8 engine or a V6 engine, but Ford say it's a Mustang. They put the Mustang badge on it and so on. And it was interesting to see, and we see this on the forums, different people's reaction to that product.
Yes, I can
Because
imagine that was fascinating.
yes, because you have some who just accept it and say, yeah, if Ford say it's a Mustang, it's a Mustang. Welcome along. Nice to see you. And they were polite. And there was other people who I was actually quite disappointed with, who were turning their nose up and weren't even speaking to the people who turned up in this car because they consider them as outsiders. And I guess it's not to that extent on the forums, but you can see it in the comment section where people will have a fixed opinion on certain products or certain brands. Bowers and Wilkins. How many times does the subject of aggressive treble come up in the comments? And these harkbacks to Bose, everybody jumps on a Bose comments thread when it turns up because it's a certain manufacturer and a certain thing. So
I mean, regardless of the fact that, as you were saying, we talk about Bowers and Wilkins down to the extent where I was fortunate enough to be able to run basic in-room measurements on the 702 S3 because it tested at the same time as an NAD M66 and no discernible high-end misbehavior. Bose has been churning out incredibly capable travel headphones for 20 years, and we still remember the somewhat misplaced advertising aggression of the 80s and 90s. It takes a very long time for certain things to go away, and there's a mind, you're absolutely right, it's a mindset that some people will not necessarily let go of. And this same resistance to where things change creates some of the interesting debates that we see now about the nature of how hi-fi is being built and how it is being positioned. And as I say, I'm genuinely fascinated by it. And where we move on from this is that I wanted to talk about there being three different options, three different paths in the road. Now, we'll just very briefly lay them out. The first is you roll with it and you accept that this is that many of the items in question are a luxury item. And I just, we work out where we sort of stop on this because I think Phil's position on this will be different to mine. Then we're going to briefly talk about pro audio, which notionally avoids all talk of finish and polishing the cannonball. I mean, it's actually not quite as simple as that, as we'll cover, but nevertheless, there is that as an alternative. And then we're going to talk about whether there is a market for hi-fi manufacturers going back to basics and producing very, very high performance items in relatively sort of austere, for want of a better word, packaging. So those are the three options. Now, I think personally that when it comes to living with a piece of equipment that you have paid your hard-earned money for, that actually it does matter how it looks, how it feels, how it behaves. This is not a simple roster of functionality. Does it elicit in a tiny way the feeling that Phil gets when he's interacting with his Mustang? And in the same way that I'm interacting with whatever piece of idiotic tat that I've purchased in the last 6 months. I think it's enormously important. One of the turntables that lives with me all the time, has now lived with me for a very, very long time, is a Michel Gyrodek. When I purchased the Vertair turntable, for which there is a review on the site, which is in itself a very luxury good, I planned to sell the Michel Gyrodek. I came to the conclusion about 8 minutes after I started that plan that I couldn't, because it simply makes me happy, the nature of it being there. It is a beautiful object. It is part sculpture, part audio equipment. So it sits there next to the Vertair. It pops up on some of the videos that I've been doing because it looks more spectacular going than the Vertair does, and so on and so forth. It exists and it makes me happy. Now, I'm comfortable with this. I make no bones about it. I am a complete sucker. So that is my position on this. I think it ha the, what you're choosing, you can be, you can state online that you are utterly measurement focused and nothing else matters, and it's all just about how the product performs. I'm just going to say, in the most instances, I don't believe you. I think that everyone has a point on this ladder where they would actually step off. I think Phil's point on the ladder is different to mine, but I do think that there is fundamentally an element of how something is built and how it behaves and how it interacts in the room which is going to matter to you. And I'm hoping that Phil's going to say, yes, but.
yeah, but again, I think, and this is where I think we need to express that these are just opinions. What we're talking about here is utterly subjective
Oh,
at the end
yes.
of the day. And what one person sees value in, somebody else might not see value in, and that's perfectly fine. And like you said right at the start, there is no right and wrong route
No.
to what we're doing here. And I'm kind of stuck in the middle, I think, a little bit, because I do agree sometimes with people's comments where they might come in and say, yeah, that's a great product, but X does that better at less money, in their opinion. And that's perfectly valid. And I sometimes I see good value in that. And one of those products I think that we can talk about, and there's been a few products we've spoken about them already this year in the Hi-Fi World, Ed, that I've kind of shaken things up because of what they do at a certain price point. And if you then go up in price and look for the equivalent, you're actually going two or three times the price
Oh,
before
yeah.
you then find the equivalent again, or something that can better what it is. So I think you've got that aspect where I don't begrudge people who say, yeah, that's great, but you can get just as good a performance for less money, and that's perfectly fine if that's the if they're happy with the performance that they're getting and they're paying out less, and the build quality or whatever's not as important to them, that's perfectly fine. And I've done that in the past where I've gone with the more budget conscious option, knowing that I'm still getting 90% of the performance, but I'm saving a bit of money. I think there's certain products, and it'll be the same for people out there, where you think, well, actually, no, this is important to me, and I want to spend a little bit more on it, or I'm going to save and go for something that's that little bit more expensive because it's got better build quality, because it looks nicer. And then there's products where I think we just fall in love with them, and I think and there's nothing wrong with saying that. There's products that I have sitting around me that I have them just because they hark back to a very good time in my life that I think, actually, I'm going to hang on to that because that actually means something to me. It has some memories attached to it, and so on. So yeah, I think you've got your various levels there, and I think there is no right and wrong, and talking about money is quite uncomfortable because you what is something worth to somebody is
Utterly
utterly
subjective.
subjective, and down to them at the end of the day. If I had the money for a Ferrari, would I go and buy a Ferrari? No, probably not. I probably wouldn't, because I think I would find better things to invest in. And again, I think that comes to your time in life as well. So that's another demographic area of where are you on this line, and what importance do you give to that piece of equipment or the subject in general. So yeah, I think it's a thorny one. I think you're going to get lots of very, very telling feedback on this, but very interesting feedback.
Well, I'm hoping.
And again, it does make it difficult. I mean, my job is basically to listen to the guys around me who are on the team and their suggestions in terms of what they think we should be covering in a given month or a given year. We sit and we look at the roadmap for the years and so on, and then we look at the forums and we say, well, what are people actually interested in, what they're talking about, and so on. And then we try to pick the products, the best products that will fit that. And I think, to an extreme edge, you're very much a case of I do not, because you've got so little time slots, I do not want to spend any time with a product that is not going to be worth the time putting into the product. It has to be at a certain level to start with before you'll certainly look at a given product. And yeah, when we've got just a few slots every year to look at products, I think that's we're looking for value for money there, in terms of, is this useful to the end user, and can we tell them something that they didn't already know about that product, and so on. So yeah, I there is no right and wrong. So
But it's
I think you're right. I think luxury goods, they are luxury goods now, and I think the price point in terms of where something becomes a luxury good has come down from where it used to be in the past. And yeah, I think you alluded to it a couple of podcasts ago when you were talking about these killer products at reasonable, affordable price points,
Yeah.
and the fact that there's now this gap in what we'd describe as the mid-range, before you then hit something that's again
Doing meaningfully better, yeah.
meaningfully better. Yeah, absolutely. So does build quality and finish matter? I think it's down to the product, the use case, the individual, and I think the price point as well. And if I think if I'm willing to invest in that product, I'll spend a bit more money. If it's going to add a bit more meaning to what I'm trying to do with my hi-fi system, if it's a pair of speakers, I think, you know what, they're going to see me till I'm gone,
Yeah.
then that's fine. I'll drop the money on them. If I think that I'm going to get the performance, I'm getting the build quality, and they're going to last me the length of time that I want them to last me.
It must be said, this has been an exciting facet of the last few years, isn't it? Where you suddenly start thinking, God, this could be the last one of these I ever have to buy. I mean, it's in its own way, it's alarming, but in its own in another way, I suppose it's quite liberating. So yeah, I'm still coming to terms with that one. But whilst I'm coming to terms with that one, one of the alternatives to accepting this relentless sort of pursuit of finish, where there's perhaps a different approach to it, is Pro Audio. Now, we haven't looked at that much Pro Audio equipment on AV Forums. It falls outside of the exact sort of remit of what we've been doing. But nevertheless, it's a different way of doing things because fit. As opposed to build, it must be well built. Pro audio people do not tolerate fiddly bits of
Oh,
equipment.
absolutely. Yeah, it
But
has to last.
finish is less important. So
It's usually just in a dark
yeah,
room.
putting it in an ornate wooden veneer and making sure it's got chrome knobs and so on and so forth is far less important. Now, Phil, unlike, I mean, I've used bits of pro audio equipment. They've cropped in and out and so on and so forth, but I don't haven't generally speaking lived long term with them. Phil did. You made a decision a number of years ago to go down a path, actually, which has seen you were just ahead of your time, mate. You're a trailblazer. You
Much right.
went for an all active multi-channel rig and you went pro for that. And you've alluded to this in the past, but I mean, I'll hand over to you, but you're thinking you were looking at the options and you suddenly realized that this just made far more value proposition than anything that was available domestically, basically, wasn't it?
At the time, absolutely. What I was doing is I was actually looking for a processor, an amplifier, speaker system, and then I was looking at ways of getting around that, and that's when I found out about Genelec, actually, not Mackie, but Genelec, and I started getting interested in that brand and trying to find out a bit more. And we were having conversations on the forums, and I've got to say, this was before the editorial. This was before I did this as a full-time job. This was just when I was an enthusiast, and AV Forums was very much in its infancy. We used to have Sunday night call-ins. There were so few of us on the forums at that time that we used to have Sunday night call-ins where we'd a very early on video call type thing where it was just audio, but you would discuss things and then you would discuss it further during the week on the forums and so on. And generally got out of my price range. I could not afford to go down that route. And then Mackie came on the scene, and if I remember right, I think I bought them second hand. I think I bought them used, a set of five, so three across the front, two surrounds. They had the built-in amplification. It just made sense to me. It made sense to me that I didn't need to find an amplifier because the amplification inside these were designed to go with the drivers and designed to hit a certain performance level for the speaker. They were near field design, so I was in a small-ish room. So it didn't matter that these were designed to be on a mixing desk or whatever, because I wasn't sitting that much further back than I would have been from a mixing desk. And I've raised two hands there, and the AI on the camera has gone all giving me fireworks and all sorts. So that was kind of the reason I fell into that. But they were going in a dedicated room. They were going in a cinema room, which the whole point of the cinema room is it is black.
Yes.
And you sit in the dark, and it doesn't matter what these speakers look like. Now, I still have a set of Genelecs. I actually use them as my editing on my rig here when I edit videos and so on. They're 6020s, they're desktop powered speakers. I think they were made between 2000 and 2005, if I remember right. So quite an old design. Fantastic. I've still haven't found anything that sits on a desk and gives as good a performance as that that I'm getting from the Genelex. And the same with the Mackie. I mean, I only got rid of the Mackie because I then moved into a reviewing kit and they made no sense because I
Yes.
needed to review amplifiers, I needed to review processors and speaker systems. And I actually gave them to a good friend of mine who's since made really good use of them and still has them. And we're talking 20, almost 20 years now. So they've lasted a long time as well. But they gave a certain level of performance, which to equal, I would have had to have spent four times the amount of cash, or even five times the amount of cash. And for me, it was an answer. It was an answer to the problem that I had. It was a solution that worked for me, but it wouldn't work for everybody.
No.
And we get back to the whole subjective thing and what works for you and your use case and so on. But yeah, that worked for me. And I've used other bits and pieces of Pro Kit through the work that I'm doing for AV forums. There's lots of things that I need high quality microphones and that kind of thing. So the pro side of things, you want something that's going to work every time. Every time you go to use that piece of kit, it needs to work. It's the same in TV world and TV production, that kind of thing. We talk about reference monitors being 32 inches and costing 30 to 40,000 pounds. The reason for that is they run all day. They have to be damn accurate and they have to work for every time somebody sits down at it to make a bit of content. So in terms of pro, you know that you're getting the build quality, you know that you're getting the reliability, you're going to get a really, really good sound quality or level of performance, but it's going to look damn ugly because
And
every bit of pro audio kit I have looks damn ugly and you wouldn't have it sitting in a living room.
then to add to that, there are other considerations. I'm not going to say downsides, they are considerations. Broadly speaking, any change and variation to the spec is not going to be decided by you as a single end user. Essentially, it's a very, very basic calculation of is there actual demand? I mean, all things are demand driven, but obviously the nature of how things end up being built for pro use, it's like what will the platform support? What's the actual initial sort of interest in the number of people that want platform A and platform B? And if it does, and essentially, if there's no interest in a certain thing, it simply it, there's a ruthlessness to pro audio. I find a combination of admirable and terrifying. If something doesn't pull its weight, it just essentially is pretty
It's
much
gone.
instantly shelved. And it also, generally speaking, they are more reactionary about, oh, it's time for my cat to turn up. It's more it's less likely to be on the absolute cutting edge of what is technically achievable, because people running in a pro environment don't necessarily want to be test pilots. It doesn't feature on their list of things to do as well. So if you
Yeah,
want the latest and
absolutely.
greatest, that doesn't generally feature in what they do there as well. You may have to be a little bit behind the power curve on that.
Yeah, and
So
that's very true. And I think I just want to pick up on that point, Ed, because I think this is one that people don't actually maybe consider when it comes to these discussions on the forums. And they say, well, I want a 4,000 net TV. Sorry to take it back to TV, but
No,
it's a good
quite.
point to make. I want a 4,000 net TV. But Hollywood are pretty much stuck on 1,000 nets, and they ain't going to move for quite some time on that and 4K. Because they've made the investment, and we're not talking about like one studio. And I think people have this idea that Sony Pictures and Universal and so on, they're just these big entities that can spend as much coin as they like and have the latest kit. And that's not the way. These big corporations are made up with tiny other subsidiary companies who
Yes.
all have their own budgets and so on. So when they make an investment in a piece of kit to then do their creative stuff and create the content you're going to watch, that budget's probably blown for the next 4 or 5 years because they've made that investment. They're not suddenly then going to upgrade because somebody on a forum somewhere in the world suddenly wants a 4,000 net master so they can watch it on the 4,000 net TV. It's just not how things work in the
No.
pro industry. You're paying a lot of money for this stuff and you're making that investment. And like you say, the product cycle, it tends to stay the same for decades. Maybe over in the recent past, it's kind of maybe come down to 5 year product cycle rather than 10 year. But a lot of these places, they don't upgrade as much, and the industry doesn't move on to, if the whole industry was to move to 8K tomorrow, they'd be bankrupt because nobody
Yes.
could afford the kit, nobody could afford the bandwidth, nobody could do what that. And I think people on forums, and maybe we're banging our head against a brick wall, I don't know, because maybe they don't take this into consideration. It's what somebody wants. I want this and I want it now. And that's, or, and I think I know what you're going to come on to, but why is X manufacturer making this? I don't want those features on. But if they made this product, I'm going to go and buy it.
No, absolutely. And if you wanted an audio parallel to this, you've given an excellent video one. On streaming services, on-demand streaming services, let's face it, is how ma music is mass consumed. The highest commonly encountered sample rate, and even then it's not common, it's encountered, is 192 kilohertz. Now, we've had domestic audio equipment which is 192 kilohertz capable for over 20 years. And we're still, and you know, these days at the absolute bleeding edge of capability, you've got well over 1,000 kilohertz PCM and DSD 1024, and it's great, except that no material exists in any meaningful quantity from any meaningful sort of mainstream outlet to make any use of it. And pro audio equipment, broadly speaking, reflects this because it does the things that it needs to do rather than catering in exotic Peruvian nose flute things that you buy from obscure European websites. So this is obviously a flip side to it. And then you, as you've alluded to, the way that things sit aesthetically, and you know, whether you want rack mounting and cooling fans and things like that, things that don't matter in a pro audio environment, but generally speaking, do in your lounge. But these, you know, and that we are encountering, I am encountering a number of people who are mixing domestic and pro equipment in their home hi-fi systems, and they seem, at least they claim repeatedly online, to be incredibly happy with the results. So,
And it happens in AV as well. There's quite a few forum members have gone out and bought JBL Pro Audio speakers that you'd find there in your local multiplex. They've gone down that route, and fair game. If that's what you want to do,
No, absolutely.
and that's what your passion is, absolutely. And it's great to see that. It's great to see people experimenting with things like that.
But I mean, this is, so if you wanted a possible step off in a different direction from where I suspect the majority of domestic audio is going, that is one option to you. But this leads on to a logical question. Why isn't there more equipment which is solely about what's under the bonnet and doesn't go in for additional features and finish, which you're having to pay for? And this is an awkward and touchy subject because I think you and I are in agreement on this. Whenever it's been tried, for all the notional enthusiasm for it, it then doesn't actually seem to generate the numbers that anything or any of the feedback from people talking, and when you listen to them, would suggest it would work. Now, the best example that we agreed on prior to this going live is again another television, because it's the most recent example of this. Previous generation Panasonic 1500 series OLED, in theory, was everything that all the comments we were seeing on the forum would suggest would be the ideal OLED television. It combined the best screen that Panasonic knew how to make with absolutely no additional sort of things in terms of sound bars and posh surrounds and floating stands and things like that. It was, you were simply, it was the nearest thing to the old PW series plasma monitors that we're likely to see in this day and age. And I think I'm right in saying that this generation of 1500 series OLED isn't like that at all, is it?
No, because it didn't sell, and this is the problem that you come up against. So there's two ways that this goes, Ed, and it's the enthusiast targeted product. Sometimes a manufacturer will pick up on what they see as a trend, and lots of manufacturers look at forums like AV forums, and they look to see what people are talking about, and so on, and they realize that the vast majority of the AV Forums members are actually influencers. I hate the use of that word, but if you want a genuine influencer, it's an AV Forums member. It's somebody who other members of their family know are interested in a certain area, whether it's hi-fi or TV or whatever, and they go to them and they say, "What's the best bit of kit that I can buy because I'm interested in a new TV or I'm interested in a turntable or whatever." What you know, the question I get asked, if I got a pound every time somebody asked, I'd have retired years ago, what's the best TV under 500 quid? That's the type of question. And AV Forums members will be the same because family members know that they have this interest, or their friends at work know they have this interest, and so on. And they are the people who, they take all this in, they go in demo, they know what they're talking about, and so on. And sometimes they are very, very valuable to manufacturers, because they are the type of people who are maybe pointing towards a trend, or where that manufacturer may be able to target a product. And certainly Panasonic do take a lot of interest in what AV Forum's members have to say about their TVs and so on, have done for a number of decades now. And certainly conversations that I've had with Panasonic, they're always interested in terms of, you know, what our users are interested in. They didn't have calibration controls in their TVs until we suggested that that was maybe a sell-up for them, and that was maybe a feature that they should have on their TVs and so on. It wasn't just AV Forums, but, you know, in general, that's kind of... So the 1500 was a product that was designed to appeal to AV Forums members, because AV Forums members had said, we want the 2000 model, but I don't want the Dolby Atmos speakers because I'm an enthusiast and I already have a sound system. I already have Dolby Atmos in my home. I just want the best panel that Panasonic can produce hang on my wall. And Panasonic said, yeah, okay, we'll do
Let's
that.
Let's do it.
And unfortunately, it didn't sell. Or it certainly didn't sell in the numbers that Panasonic had anticipated it selling in, and that we maybe thought, as enthusiasts, more people would be interested. And some of the feedback was that the product was hard to sell in Currys and in John Lewis and so on, because it was targeted at a specific owner. And some of the feedback was, well, how come this TV is almost the same price and it hasn't got this the fancy speakers and so on? So Panasonic have gone down a different route. They've added that step of gradation now into their product lineup, where the 2000 has the best panel, has a Dolby Atmos sound system. The 1500 now has a soundbar at the front, and it no longer has the top panel. It has the next step down panel. So the only one that has the top panel is the 2000, and it comes with all the bells and whistles, because rightly, Panasonic and any manufacturer is in a business, and a business is main goal is to make money for its shareholders and so on. So that's the crux of it, really. It has to sell and it has to make money. The other route that you could go down, Ed, and I think this is more to do with hi-fi and where you see more of these hi-fi brands, is that they will make you a product, but they will charge you for it. They will charge you for the cost that it costs them, plus they want to make their margin on top. But if you're prepared to pay for it, they will make you that product. One of the products has been around for a long time because of its modular design and because of the fact that it is seen as a bit of a status symbol. So on is the Lin turntable.
Yes, it's one of the very few examples where it's genuinely stuck, because a classic example of a very, very clever piece of thinking, and an older one, Arcam's old Alpha series components were all upgradable. You could turn one into another. You sent it back to Arcam, you handed them a check, and it came back as a more... And by logic, it should have been, you know, they were all very good, and it saved you an enormous amount of money. I was speaking to someone who worked for Arcam at that time, and the number of people that actually took it up was about 5%. And that's why they don't do it anymore. It made perfect sense. People raved about it. People bought in a differentiation to the Panasonic, people did buy the more entry-level components on the strength of being able to do this. They just, when it was their own money and their own time to do it, and stop me if you've heard this one before, they wanted a product that looked and felt more special, as well as offered more performance.
Yeah, and I mean, modular design is not anything new, is it?
No.
I mean, NAD, NAD, they still do it.
They have done it in a much, I would argue that they are an interesting example of actually getting it right, because it doesn't have to go back. It's either at the dealer or it's an end user business to slot the cards in. And it is simply holes in the back of the unit to which you add extra functions. The product does not become something physically different. Yeah. They've looked at where other people went wrong, and they very much, in my opinion, got it right. Even then, I don't know how many people buy MDC modules. I'd be interested to know if they were willing to part with any information on that. But it does seem to keep their products contemporary and in the field for an extremely long time, and that's a very, very commendable thing. But yes, that's if you like an exception. The Lin and the NAD are sort of exceptions that prove the rule. It can be done. It just seems to work better when you start with something relatively premium to start with. So, you know, there's some interesting arguments to be had there. But on a fundamental level, we'll sort of finish this off because we've got questions and stuff to deal with. But on a fundamental level, we are subject to what the majority of people want in so many walks of life. The majority of people say, if I'm going to have something which is, I mean, let's talk about a speaker. If it's a meter tall and it's got lots of drivers on it, I do actually want it to be finished to a level that's a piece of furniture. Bowers and Wilkins could make you a 702S3 Signature in a black crackle finish, and I'm sure it would be cheaper than it is covered in Datuk gloss ebony. I just don't believe they'd sell enough of them for it to be worth the effort. That's the mechanics of it. So you have alternatives. We've looked at Pro Audio and so on and so forth. And then we also have this more subjective area where I want your feedback is where you step off, what you're willing to pay for and what you aren't, because it does shape, you know, we are a responsive community. I want to know when I look at go get certain products in for review, is it completely and utterly irrelevant or not? Because that's you know, relevance is what we're all searching for. So that, if you like, sort of finishes this circle. But I'd be genuinely interested in thoughts, either in the comments, you can start other threads, you can reply down here and so on, and underneath the video. I just want to know, argue, you know, if you can provide examples about what you've bought and where you decided actually you weren't prepared to, that would be very useful as well. But yeah, as I say, I'm interested to see if we can get something approaching a consensus on this.
And you know, for me personally, if you're asking me now, Ed, you know, where I sit or stand, normally sit most of the day actually. Yeah, I've got a standing desk, you know, one of these, yeah, sitting position all the time. Never stand on it. But anyway, my view has changed over the 20 years in terms of what I look for in a product now, in terms of what I'm after in terms of a product. And for me, aesthetics are a lot more important. Build quality of the materials used and so on mean more to me now than they probably did in the past. You know, those marquees that were ugly, but I loved the performance from them. And I was sitting in a black room and I didn't really care. Would I sit in a black room now? No. You know, I'm kind of past that dedicated room where it's blacked out and I'm going to sit in the dark and watch films. That's not where I am at this moment in time. And I think you're going to get a lot of feedback from people who are probably on the same journey and have been for the last 20 years if they've been on AV forums and so on, where they've started out at one end and you know, at this end now, things are more, you know, aesthetics are more important to them now and build quality is more important. And they're willing to pay that little bit extra for that really beautiful product that sits in the living room and looks like a quality item rather than just a functional piece of equipment. And I think we're seeing a lot more of that. And I think we're seeing a lot more manufacturers looking at that. I mean, the new Arcam designs on their product, that's a complete sidestep for them. They've obviously thought about that. You've got older designs like the Technics turntables that have come back because they're seen as design icons, you know, you can buy various levels, but people instantly recognize that product and they know what it is. We've mentioned the Linn turntables as well. You know, people now are buying into Linn. You know, that turntable's been around, what, 50 years, 60 years?
50 years.
People buying into it again now because they appreciate that, hey, it's been around 50 years, the engineering's spot on, it's highly changed. And, you know, it's cost me a lot of money, but this thing's never going to break down. And there's a huge community around that kind of product as well. So, yeah, I think you're going to get some interesting feedback on this one. I
Yeah,
think,
well, I'm really hoping so. And you can violently disagree. I have no, this is a misconception that's cropped up right now. I don't have a problem with people violently disagreeing with me, especially if you can point out why. Don't just say you're a knob. You are welcome to say I'm a knob. But if you can quantify why I'm a knob, that is more useful.
got to quantify
So, oh,
the
well,
knobbage,
absolutely.
if you're getting.
So that, yeah, I say, I if you like, this is a slight interlude into the building your hi-fi system thing because it keeps cropping up. And I found it genuinely interesting, and I'm seeking feedback and thoughts on it because it fascinates me, and I'd like to know where we sit. Anyway, we have.
We're going to bring up back a feature we haven't had for a few months. We kind of forgot about it, and I thought, oh, hang on a minute, we need to be doing this feature every month. So it's Ed's album vinyl and playlist time. So, what have you been listening to, Ed?
I've been listening to loads of stuff. I will say I don't feel that 2024 has been a good a year for music as 2023, but this could just be me getting old, because I am. But nevertheless, there are still good things hitting the streaming services. My favourite was not the week just gone, but the week before. Moby is having an interesting phase of his existence. He's gone from being a megastar to not really being a megastar anymore. And I think some of that is of his own decisions and some of that isn't of his own decisions. He has been working more with other artists in the last few years, based around a label project called Always Centered at Night. Now, there is now a full length album of the same name, Always Centered at Night, which combines Moby's ear for arrangement and music with guest vocalists. Now, I do quite like Moby. I've liked him for quite a long time. I would argue that he's always been a better musician than a vocalist. So this is a very, very good combination. It's got to some people with some fabulous voices on this album, underpinned by a wildly different selection of musical styles and tempos and genres. And I think it's a genuinely interesting and genuinely enjoyable thing to listen to. You can, of course, listen to it on all major streaming services. It is available on CD and LP. I haven't ordered it yet because I've got to buy car insurance and other tedious things this week. So, in terms of vinyl that I have bought, some people are going to roll their eyes as they listen to this on earphones or wherever they're listening to it, because I keep banging on about this bloke. The magnificently named Warrington Runcorn Newtown Development Plan released their fifth album, Your Shared Community Hub. Now, I don't mean to sound a bit weird here, but genuinely, this bloke is getting better and better and better every single time he releases an album. I loved the calm sort of ambient nature of the early ones, but this is a genuinely lovely and clever thing to listen to. The first track, A Shared Sense of Purpose, I'm gonna put it out there. It's a genuinely lovely thing to listen to. It's got a really nice tune and it builds beautifully. And actually, if you listen to the single that was the EP that was released ahead of this album, there's an unplugged 1972 version of it as well, which is genuinely magnificent and sounds like it came from 1972. That's my vinyl choice because it just lends itself to vinyl. He's also got an absolutely fabulous eye for graphic design, and it just, they are monumentally nice things to look at. That is my vinyl choice of this era. And then playlist, I put one playlist in and then immediately deleted it because I found something else and started listening to it. And it's like, yeah, actually, that's brilliant. Cobuzz has released Greatest Basslines. Now, just so we're clear, we're not talking about dub here. We're actually talking about bass guitar. So if you're looking for something to make your organs vibrate, it's not that. But it does what it says on the tin. There's some bloody great bass lines in there. That is on Cobuzz, who are still, if I'm honest, generating the best curated content of any streaming service out there. If you need it ported from Cobuzz to another location, you can click on the link to the Cobuzz soundtrack and you can port it across using a piece of software called Soundiz to any of the streaming services that you happen to be using. And as none of the songs are particularly rare or hard to find, they will all port across. So when you say, oh, I don't listen to Cobuzz, it doesn't matter. You can still steal their hard work. Sorry. Borrow their hard work and then consider that when it's time to change your streaming service subscription, they're still the best streaming service out there. So yeah, that's where we are. Those are my recommendations.
Excellent. Thanks for that, Ed. Right. So we just need to do some Q&A feedback from the last Hi-Fi podcast, which was the 3rd of June, the 5K Hi-Fi Challenge. That's not running. That's actually 5K as in value, so pounds or dollars. How would you spend a notional $5,000 on a hi-fi system? So from the main podcast thread, the high-end Munich show report, THX 1138 UK said, great to hear that when shows are popular, it's a reflection of the state of the wider market. When times are hard, shows disappear, and certainly a lot of shows have disappeared or downsized and so on in the past. So yeah, it's great to see that. He says he thinks the current upswing in hi-fi is probably largely due to the resurgence in vinyl, which seems to be particularly popular with the younger crowd. I'm not sure, I haven't seen any research that is the case, but yeah, you see a lot more vinyl for sale these days, and certainly HMV have gone back to HMV used to be in the 70s and 80s, where it's full of records. So yeah, he says it's not for him, but he's glad it's keeping the market strong and so on. Obviously, great to hear about the show from Ed. And he does ask, do you need to be in the trade to attend, or is it open to the
No,
public?
Munich is open to all. There is one trade day on the Thursday. After that, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday are open to the general public, and they turn up in significant numbers. Closer to home, I didn't attend it just this weekend gone, but there was the show in Craneich, and feedback from that is it wasn't obviously Munich levels of attendance, but Munich's a global show. But Craneich had very decent attendance, and once again, there were people, Phil, younger than us attending, and it was very exciting.
Well,
So
that's good.
yeah, I think that there's interest in it, and I do agree that it is tied to economy, and it is tied to how we're feeling. But it does seem to be that in some ways, the darkest sort of phase of it seems to be behind us. If you organize a show correctly, it's doing all right. So, that's quite something.
Yeah,
So,
I mean,
yes.
this is probably a conversation for another podcast, but is that the fact that people can't demo stuff as easily
Oh,
as
there's
they used to
certainly
be able
something
to?
in that. Yes.
Yeah, maybe we come back to that one on another podcast and not go down that rabbit hole just yet. Sticking to that subject, Johnny Too Bad said, interesting, thought-provoking and entertaining. What's not to like? Thank you very much for your feedback. It is appreciated. And thank you for taking the time. When you guys do take the time to write comments and ask questions and so on, it really is appreciated. So thanks very much for that. Toon Army says, thanks, gents. Interesting podcast, proof that choice is very subjective. And again, we've been really subjective on this podcast. So I'm expecting the same kind of feedback. Do you want to take the next one from Jim Beveridge, Ed?
Yes, Jim Beveridge 5185. As an AV4 member for many years, love the discussion. My latest Music Room 2 channel system is two Sonos Era 300s for streaming Dolby Atmos. These speakers have line-in connections. The left speaker is attached to Sony CD player, the right speaker to a Project turntable. My beloved Akai 4000 D Mark II is connected to the Era 300 speaker by the use of a low-latency Bluetooth transmitter. My LG TV, which sits behind the speakers, has AirPlay, which connects directly to the Era 300s, allowing me to watch music videos with no latency issues. The Sonos speakers recognize the analog equipment as stereo and play it through both speakers. What a wonderful time to be able to pick and mix services and components. I mean, that's a classic example of just how far we've evolved, isn't it? And also the fact that it all still, with a little bit of work and jiggery pokery, continues to talk to each other. Which means that hi-fi systems are different shapes and do different things than they've ever done at any stage in the time that stereo has existed. And I find that both refreshing, fascinating, and at times genuinely terrifying in terms of actually working out what it is I should be looking at. But nevertheless, it's a classic example of just how widespread and things actually are. So that's thank you for your feedback, Jim. That's very useful. 444 Chroma says, thank you. I'm interested in some active speakers now, as well you should be. And there's going to be more of them. I've got another set lined up imminently because they are a very, very neat solution. Lint 8391 argues that discussion was unfairly weighted towards new products with 5 grand, which they state is more than they pay for a car. Is more than you could get for some great secondhand gear. You're absolutely right, except that the rules of the thread as presented was for new equipment only, which I do feel was a restrictor, and it's not a restrictor that applies to anyone in reality. But we were asked to go new, so I did. You are absolutely right that even if we ignored the true perils of buying something which is 25 years old and has an uncertain number of previous owners, even if you opened yourself up to Dealer X demo stuff, an open box, yeah. I'd have changed my answer based on open box at the
And I
time.
think that's a whole podcast on its own as well. Do
Oh
you
no.
go down the used route? Obviously, AV Forums has a massive classified section, lots of nice gear turned out there for sale. So, yeah, I think that's definitely an area for us to look at in the future. So, thank you very much for your questions. If you've got questions for this week and you want them answered on the next Hi-Fi podcast, then it's podcast@avforums.com on the email. You can put your comments in the thread below if you're watching on YouTube. And of course, if you're watching, or sorry, if you're listening audio only, then of course you can head over to AV Forums, go down the bottom of the forum list, you'll find a podcast forum. Go find this podcast, ask your questions there. And our producer, Andy, he collates all of these and adds them to the running order. So you will get an answer from us on a future podcast.
Yes.
Finally, current competitions, hardware competitions, open to AV Forums members. What can we win, Ed?
Oh, there's some good stuff here. You can win a pair of Focal Hadness headphones. Now, these are on my list of things to look at. I have been badgering the long-suffering PR to get a pair of these in because I have heard them very briefly, and I think that they are going to be quite something. There's a good chance that you might get to see them ahead of me. You can win a pair of them. They're worth £599. They're courtesy of AV.com. The closing date is the 11th of August, so there's a bit of time yet. I might be able to do a review telling you how good I think that they are prior to that point, but that's going to be an excellent price. I know that's going to be an excellent price. You can also win a pair of Q Acoustics M40 powered micro tower speakers, which have been reviewed and received an absolutely blinding review from Simon, and a pair of QED digital cables worth a total of £1,069. So yes, they were awarded 10 out of 10 and a best in class award. That's open till July 31st. Win a streaming system worth £2,400, which includes a Roxana Tessa integrated streaming amplifier and Monitor Audio 100 7G bookshelf speakers. Closing date for that is 11:59 on Wednesday, August the 28th. All of these competitions are open to eligible AV Forums members over 18 and who are residents of the UK. It's everyone except Phil and Stuart, basically. So, I mean, get stuck in, get registered, get trying. There are also, I'm going to use it, there's a plethora of
Oh,
DVD,
there's
Blu-ray, and 4K disc competitions available for patrons and standard AV Forums members to win. I mean, there's all sorts of stuff. There's stuff I wouldn't mind owning. There's stuff I don't even understand what it is. And there's stuff where if I want it, I'd be confused and probably send it straight to a charity shop. There's a lot of different things there. But disc competitions are open to eligible AV Forums members or patrons resident in the UK, same as the hardware.
Yep, previous winners, Woodface 7, he won the Project T2 Superphone with turntable worth £559, courtesy of Peter Tyson and Henley Audio. Well done on your prize there.
Yep, review for
Cracking
that is up on the
prize.
site. It's a cracking thing. Beautiful turntable at the money. And it sounds just as nice as it looks. So yeah, an excellent prize. Well done, you.
Excellent. And some new patrons, and somebody bought us a coffee, Ed.
Yes. Oisin Harper, Jim Cameron, Mr. Black 79, and Oscar Madfish are new patrons. So welcome and thank you.
Yeah,
And
thank you,
Repo Man
guys.
666 bought us a coffee. Thank you for your ongoing support. It is appreciated. And yeah, just we'll keep plugging away and
Yeah.
try and
One day.
improve at what we do.
One day we might make a good
One day,
podcast. One
one
day.
day.
Talking about podcasts, that's it for this one. The
Yeah.
Hi-Fi podcast, it's been and gone. Thank you very much for watching and listening. Our next episode of the AV Forums podcast is the TV Display and Calibration Edition, which is coming along on the 8th of July. And we're taking a deep dive into the current TV market to see what's trending, what's not trending, what's selling, big screens, all that kind of thing. And we're doing that with Paul Gray from Omdia. Who are one of these companies who do all the market research, and he's got some fascinating things to talk about there. So join us for that one on the 8th of July. And don't forget, the podcasts are available every Monday from 7 p.m. on the YouTube channel. That's AV Forums Podcast YouTube channel. Go and head over to that channel and subscribe so you will always get the podcast. And of course, your podcast provider will provide you with an audio-only version that follows just after 7 on that evening as well. And if you've enjoyed the podcast, then please do think about sharing it. If you like what we're talking about, if you like what we're doing here at AV Forums, and you think it deserves a bigger audience, and your friends need to be listening or watching and so on, then please do share it on your social and other channels or other forums and so on. Just spread the word. It would be appreciated. I'm Phil Hinton. Thank you very much for watching and listening, and we'll see you again on the next one. Goodbye.